Hey everybody, thanks Cheryl. I do plan to continue reading from Papaji. I think that the Wake Up and Roar book, I think that what Papaji's teaching is on the leading edge of what I'm learning. So I think that for me, it's appropriate to continue with what I'm doing. Certainly, if you know the part of Regina's suggestion where she talked about, you know, if you have contemplation that is relevant to what you're reading, you know, if you want to stop and say, oh, this reminds me of what I was contemplating the other day, blah blah blah, bring that in. So where it's appropriate, I will. Bring my my contemplation in. I don't think I have anything this week, frankly, but yeah, my plan is to use the hey Ann, my plan is to use the book as my guide. Now, having said that, I will tell you that I do want to take a second. It's funny. I just got off the bench, which is a very, very, very different, seemingly very different environment. I hadn't sat in court for a while, but I did sit for the last couple of days, so it feels like it's a real, shift, a different kind of shift to shift gears here from, from my day job. But you know, I think that's, you know, we talk about using everything for our awakening, our understanding, our healing, and I think that all these things are used. Yeah, so I don't know how this is going to go today, but I haven't known how this program is going to go since I started it 3 or 4 weeks ago. And I don't need to know. So I'm just trying to get catch my breath here and kind of shift gears, but I keep rambling because I want to say that even the idea that I have to shift gears tells me there's something else going on here. You know, that there's something that I'm taking to work with me, or that I'm picking up at work when I'm on the bench, that I think is somehow different when I get home and I'm sitting in my study with the Papaji book open in front of me. And you know, those are artificial markers, you know, those are artificial borders that Papaji's talked about, that we've all talked about, and you know, it's not like I forget about this all day, but there's certainly a certain persona that I take on when I put on my judicial robe and I sit behind the bench, you know. It's not, again, it's not like the old days. I'm not like I'm the judge and you're not. although that comes occasionally, but you know, it's just it just feels different and kind. And what I'm trying to say is, the truth of it is it's not different and kind. You know, Floyd Henderson might say, you know, judging happens, you know, judicial work happens. I'm no more the doer of the judicial work than I am the reader of the Papaji book. And so I'm going on and on at length about this because that occurs to me as I sit here, and I just want to be really clear about that. For me, that there's not something different in kind going on when I sit down in front of this computer with you guys than there is when I sit down in my robe behind the bench. So And I want to start with a prayer of sorts. And I say of sorts because I'm not, as you guys may be aware, everything's conditional with me anymore, right? I can't even say a sentence, a full sentence, without looking at everything that I'm saying. I do want to start with a prayer, although these days I'm not sure quite what I'm praying to. It's clear to me I'm not praying to a separate entity. At one time, not very long ago, I would have said I am praying to the universe or to the beingness or the isness, and it's been suggested that perhaps the prayer is just really an invitation to open my heart and to make myself available to the truth. And that really is the prayer. I want to be open. I want to be available. I don't want to be in any persona. Judicial, spiritual, or otherwise. So I just want to dedicate this hour to truth, and open my heart to that, and we'll see what truth comes through. So that's my quasi prayer. I don't mean it. I just mean I'm not sure it's appropriate to call it a prayer. Okay, so last week we left off, and we reading from "Wake Up and Roar," Sad Song with Papaji by Eli Jackson Bear. You guys may know Eli Jackson Bear is the husband of Gangaji. We don't hear a lot from Eli in his own right, but he's written this lovely book about his time spent with Papaji, and really, this is it's transcriptions of conversations Papaji had with his students, followers, folks who showed up at his satsang. So now that I've rambled for 10 minutes, I'm going to take a little drink and we'll get started. I was going to say I'm on page 10. Okay, here we I am going to back up just a bit. We started this. This is chapter 2. Who are you? And the student was asking Papaji, "What's this whole thing about obedience? And if obedience sounds like duality, isn't there someone who's obedient and someone to be obedient to?" And Papaji has been explaining, "No, it's like the wave on an ocean, or the fingers on your hand. Are the fingers on your hand obedient to your hand? Does that even make sense?" So that's where we left off. So now, let me read that part actually. It says, "You love yourself," capital S. "You love yourself. Is it not obedience? The river merging, the river discharging into the sea, is it not obedience? Externally, you call it obedience, going back to meet herself. You can call it obedience, or you can call it return to the source, according to your temperament. And the ocean is happy to receive you. If obedience is given to anyone else, then you call it duality. But where is duality? You have two hands, two feet, 10 fingers, a nose. How many parts to this body? But when you say I, is it duality? When you see your face in the mirror, are there two persons? When you see truth, you know there has never been duality, right from the beginning until the end of the universe." The student says, "I was thinking of the self-creating multiplicity for its own enjoyment." Which is interesting. We talk about this. For many years, I have talked about, and you can see everything's up for question, but for many years, I have talked about this tiny man idea, this wish that everything could be different, as NTI, that everything was different than it was. What would it be like if everything was different than it was? is the way NTI talks about it. And I have often explained it to, when I've taught Course in Miracles classes, or even, when I'm just discussing this with family or whomever, I've often explained it as if consciousness is your hand, and each of us are like, the fingers on the hand, right? So it's just consciousness peeking out through, this thumb is Jacqueline, and my index finger is Kathy, and my middle finger is, Joe Brown down the street, and my ring finger is Regina. So it's just consciousness experiencing through these different avenues. And let me back up just a second and say that, because I see I didn't finish that thought. We've talked about, I've talked about and described it this way. So isness was just ising, zzz, whatever isness does, right? Zzz. And this tiny idea was like isness just went, okay, let's just try something new. This is a little boring. Although the little boring is probably, I've recognized for a long time that that's probably incorrect. But it's just like, let's just, let's do something different for kicks. And so it's interesting to see that this student is saying the same thing. I was thinking of the self creating multiplicity for its own enjoyment. So, yeah. So it seems to encompass all of those ideas I just talked about. This is his question. Papaji says, when you cross the ocean, you will see the emptiness of unity. When you cross the ocean, you will see the emptiness of unity. I can go on from there, right? The emptiness of unity. I'm telling you guys that all of this stuff is being turned on its head for me, because this is not how we think of unity. I've always said, that the ego mind can't comprehend oneness, because you say oneness to the separate mind, and the separate mind can do is to picture everybody standing really, really close together, right? Because we're so convinced of our separateness that when you say oneness, you think of just really, really closeness or intimacy or something like that. But oneness is a concept that, frankly, is beyond the confines of the thinking mind. And so this statement seems to take that even further. Oneness is emptiness. I mean, that's pretty radical. You will see the emptiness of unity. And of course, what the thinking mind wants to do, my thinking mind wants to do, is say, they just mean, no personalities, or maybe no manifestational form. But to say emptiness is just seems like a really interesting way to put it. I want to read the sentence again. It says, when you cross the ocean, you will see the emptiness of unity. And I want to say that last week, we looked at that space, spot, place, location. I mean, we're not going to be able to describe it with words. State of mind, even, it doesn't get you there, but before thought. And we talked about the fact, we did that little exercise, and we talked about the fact of how it felt there, and Cheryl had talked about it felt like nothingness. I forget what term, actually Anne talked about how it felt kind of like a pregnant pause, right? Potentiality there. And we talked about the fact that it felt like this is probably, I knew that Papaji was fond of the term emptiness. And so we surmised that when he said emptiness, he was talking about that whatever space, spot, place before thought. So now he's talking about the emptiness of unity. I'll let him finish his paragraph, and then then we'll see what else we need to look at here. He says, when you cross the ocean, you will see the emptiness of unity. When you dream, you see many different people of many different ages. And you see mountains that are millions of years old and different stars or whatever. And when you are awake, was what you saw in the dream unity or multiplicity? The student says, a dream within the unity. Papaji says, when you wake up, unity also goes. Duality goes also. So when you wake up from this waking sleep, you return to emptiness. Whenever we see objects, we are dreaming. And when we are dreaming, this means we are also sleeping. So you have to wake up with a shout, I want to be free. With this shout, you will wake up and everything goes. Otherwise, you will be reborn again and again in endless cycles of cow pass, for... Gosh, what does that say? I don't even know I can read that number. I thought it said 4 million, but it's 4,320 and then another 6 zeros. what is it? Billion, 4,320,000,000 years? Which is the Brahmic cycle for the end of the universe. So with this shout, you will wake up and everything goes. Otherwise, you will be reborn again and again in endless cycles of 4 billion years. Yeah, thank you, billion. So obviously he's referring to I don't know how obvious it is. He says you will be reborn again and again, and certainly there's a belief in is it Buddhism? Are we talking about Buddhism, I guess? Anyway, there's a belief in reincarnation. And, you know, it's funny because reincarnation is something that I grew up with. You know, that's what my parents were looking at. That's what we studied. We, you know, we had Edgar Cayce and Ruth Montgomery and you know, people from the other side of the veil that were telling us how this works and that reincarnation was really a thing. But, you know, frankly, and so I guess that Papaji is really saying the same thing here. You know, I don't know. Okay, let's start here. Even if reincarnation were really a thing, right? Even if reincarnation is the relative truth, it's still relative truth. You know, that even if it were true on that level, this idea that that there are separate and distinct souls that, you know, come back again and again and again in these same composition, and at least as far as the soul goes. Even if that were true, that would be a relative truth. But I got to tell you that I don't know why I feel this way. I don't want to take up another belief, so I got to look at that. But, you know, I don't want to believe in reincarnation or not believe in reincarnation, but it just doesn't seem to me that that's how this works. And I'll tell you why. I tell you, it does not appear to be even a helpful bridge thought. this whole idea of reincarnation, because I think, frankly, that the idea, and I think it is just an idea, but I think the idea of reincarnation fosters this belief that I somehow can achieve something. It fosters this this duality belief, this dual belief in reward and punishment. So that if I live a good life, then I get good karma and I get to come back in a better position next time. Or that's one version, right? In another version, if I work really hard, right, earn my reward. If I work really hard at coming closer and closer to enlightenment, then even if I don't become enlightened in this lifetime, it's all right. I won't have lost anything. I get to start right there at that understanding in my next lifetime. So you can see how it really sounds like to me like still a concept. It's Kathy says. It still seems like an ego-designed system, doesn't it? Because for ego, everything is gained through, there can be such a thing as, I mean, if it's all one, there's no degrees, right? So there can be such a thing as gain. And if there can be such a thing as gain, then there's got to be a way to gain it. Then you can be either good at gaining it or bad at gaining it. But you see, the duality is instantly in that model. So if everything is oneness or it's not, and that's what, again, I think that's what Papaji's talking about. I mean, I think he's saying it's beyond all of that. The truth is beyond all of that. There are no hierarchies. There's no earning good karma or bad karma. There's nothing you can do to improve yourself, and there's no need to. Because what seems to be dawning as the truth on me, what seems to be dawning on me as the truth, is that it's just really a greater understanding of what's being said by this whole non-duality thing. I think that, you know, we say we're non-dualist or Advaita Vedanta or whatever those words are, right? But then we still want to think, because that's what we do, because that's what our mindset is, that's our paradigm, we still want to think in dual terms. That there's a here and a there. And if I work, you know, and then everything that comes with it. If I work hard enough, I go from here to there. There's a place other than right here that's more perfect. And I think that when we do that, gosh, we just, we keep ourselves, you know, we're fooling ourselves. We keep ourselves in this duality mindset and tell ourselves we're doing something else. Oh, we're all one, and if I work really hard, then I'll be a better part of the one. You know, A Course in Miracles told us, I need do nothing. Bible and the Bible and everything afterwards has told us, be still and know I am God. Many people have shortened it to, and I think appropriately, be still and know I am. So if there's only one thing, we can never become better at being the one thing. It's impossible. I can see that starting to get a little bit attenuated. It's like the prayer that I often say, which is my prayer is to get out of the way, right? So if we are required, quote unquote, required to do anything, it's to transcend the idea that there's an I that has to do or to undo anything. So for me, I'm trying to figure out how I, right? How I've started the sentence and I can't even finish it. because if I am going to do anything or undo anything, right, see, I've thrown myself right there and back into it. I talked a little bit about it last night, I think, in growing with NTI in terms of, well, actually, in growing with NTI, I was talking about the Tao Te Ching, right? But it's like there's a path. It's not a path, though, because it's not from here to there. But there's a place, there's a way of being. I think Regina has referred to it recently as a naturalness. That can be appreciated, can be realized, can be seen, can be lived in, without any effort. Now, we talk about purification, and Anne has mentioned purification here on the board, but that's like what Rupert Spira was talking about and Regina was talking about in Gentle Healing when it seems like effort. She had us do that exercise where we clenched our fist, and if you walked around for 30 years with your fist clenched, it would seem like it would take effort to unclench your fist. But it's really the clenching of the fist that's the effort. So, to again, we're limited by language, but to find this place of naturalness, to rest, to abide in the naturalness, to not push on the pendulum, as the Tao Te Ching might say it, so that it can rest in its natural balance, is not really an effort. It's just to stop doing all that other stuff that we've been doing. So it's a relaxing of the fist in the Rupert Spira analogy. All right. So let's go back to Papaji. Papaji says, and this is in a new little section. Papaji says, no, Papaji does not say, the student says, is enlightenment or self-realization just an awareness, a self-evident awareness of being? Papaji says, yes, it is awareness. Total awareness or being, same thing. No difference. Total awareness. Everything is there, and you are that awareness. The student says, I have this awareness, yet, as everybody knows, your realization is much deeper than mine. What is the difference? Papaji says, you make a difference. Otherwise, there is no difference. And this is like what Jesus says in A Course in Miracles when he says, gosh, I'm not going to be able to quote it. But he says something like, you and I are the same, and everything we are has or comes from God. The only difference is I have nothing that doesn't come from God, right? It's the same thing. If you want to make up a difference, which is what we've been busy doing, what I've been busy doing for 56 years, then I can make up a difference. If I want to sit here now and say, oh, but that Papaji, you know, he was so close to God, and I got this thing that keeps me, whatever it is, I got to practice some more. I got to, you know, I got to clear my mind some more. I got to do some more purification. If I want to make that difference, I can make the difference. But if I don't, if I transcend all ideas of difference, if I relax all ideas of difference, there is no difference. Because in reality, there is no difference. And that's exactly what we were reading last night from NTI 1 Corinthians when it said, you know, you want to become an empty shell. And by the way, there's no such thing as an empty shell. There's no shell. But this is a bridge thought. It may be helpful to think of yourself as a shell that needs to be emptied, but in reality, there's not. And so there is no difference between Buddha and me, and Papaji and me, Regina and me. It's only my insistence that there's a difference that maintains the difference. Get a drink here. So the student says, if I were to sit there where you are, speaking to Papaji, if I were to sit there where you are, after 1 week, nobody would come here anymore. Papaji says, you can try. Come here. Everyone laughs. Then Papaji says, when I asked the difference, my master removed my difference and I accepted it. Of course, he's referring to Ramana Maharshi. And I can tell you what... I watched a movie the other night, the other day or whatever, on YouTube. Cheryl, I sent you the name of that movie. I can't remember it right now, what it is. It's a full movie about Papaji available on YouTube. It's really good. A video that I had asked that you play if I didn't make it today. It doesn't matter. Anyway. And in this movie, they talk about, some of his students talk about how when they are in Papaji's presence, this relaxing that we're talking about, this awareness of, this creating of differences, you know, all of that is more easily dissolved in the presence of you know, a realized one, right? And so, gosh, do you see though that even as I say that, I'm like, oh yeah, if only I weren't located in southern Indiana, but I were over in India, and, you know, Ramana Maharshi were still alive, or even Papaji for that matter, then I wouldn't be different. Then I could easily become enlightened. Cheryl has typed in the room, call off the search. Yeah, so if you're interested in it's, and like I said, it's a really good movie, you might want to take a look at it. It's a full movie's available on YouTube. But it seems like there's something to be said. I don't know if it's true, but it seems like there's something to be said for being in the presence of someone who has realized. Maybe it's because that someone just is not willing to believe their own BS or yours, you know? So anyway, Papaji says, when I asked the difference, my master removed my difference and I accepted it. So, obviously it doesn't take a trip to India. If there is a truth of who I am, and we know, and that I know for sure, there is a truth. I might be, completely comprehend or at all comprehend, who knows, what that truth is, but I know in the heart of me, I know in the very heart of me, in the very soul of me, whatever you want to call it, there is a truth. I also know that what Papaji has been pointing to, what he's pointing to now, is that what the Course in Miracles points to, nothing real can be threatened, nothing unreal exists, is the fact that that truth is unchangeable, unaffected by anything I do or don't do. You know, that's, again, reading from NTI last night, it was saying, wait a minute, let me look at it, because it's it was funny to find it there, because I sure hadn't seen it there before. Yeah, it says the reason for emptying the shell is not to free you. You are free. The reason for emptying the shell is not to make you loved. You are love. The reason for emptying the shell is to let go of the points of experience that tell you that you are what you are not. And I'm going to back up a paragraph again in NTI. It says, you seem to be in the world and you experience yourself there, but I have already told you that you are not in the world. Therefore, nothing in the world can be important to who you are. You know, it's transcending what you think you are. And transcending, again, it sounds like effort. It sounds like accomplishment. Woo, I finally transcended that. Cool, now I earn this reward. No, there's nothing to be earned. And what I gathered from what we read in NTI last night, and again, if you want to go back and look at that, that's NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 7, is that it's, and he was saying, you know, if you don't practice great, okay, that's fine, because you cannot affect the truth of who you are, what you do or what you don't do. And I think he used, Holy Spirit, NTI, used words to that effect. It doesn't matter whether you do anything or whether you don't do anything. That's really not the point. You can't, because you can't change who you are. And again, he's point in Holy Spirit in NTI is pointing to this exact idea of emptiness. It says, "If you, okay, remember this. Here's where we're going to start. This is NTI, page 294, 1 Corinthians chapter 7. It says, remember this: your truth is as it is and cannot be changed. If you seem to make a mistake in your attempts to empty your shell, do not worry. It's only practice. More opportunities to practice will be given. Do not worry that the shell must be emptied or you are a sinner. For in truth, the shell does not exist. Therefore, it cannot be emptied or full in reality. Therefore, the condition of the shell has no effect on your worth. So there's, you know, there's nowhere to go. There's nothing to do. There's no one to be. There's no improvement. I can't take a self-improvement course and do better, be better, gain more, gain eternal life. What seems to be indicated, both by NTI and I think by Papaji, is that, you know, you're free to do whatever you want to do. We're just kind of giving you some pointers so that you can live in this naturalness of life. And in this naturalness of life, there is no suffering. You know, that's what Jesus was talking about, I think, when he was talking about the lilies of the field. Right? They don't take thought for what they're going to wear. They don't toil. They're just in that naturalness, that beingness of who we are. So again, Papaji says, when I asked the difference, my master removed my difference and I accepted it. So if the truth of who we are is unchanging, unchangeable, then how could it require anything? You know, he said this to us last week. How can there be any distance between what is and what is? The only thing between those two points is illusion. But the only thing is the second point is an illusion. There's no distance to travel. There's nothing to be done. Now, I'm aware that it may not always be helpful to go, oh, I need to do nothing, I'm cool. And by the way, that guy over there, he sucks, and I'm going to beat him up next time I see him, right? So it may not always be helpful to just go, and everything's going to be great, right? So you know, if you're pissed, look at it, right? If you're angry or depressed or, you know, whatever it is, whatever emotion that you seem to be locked within, if you feel locked within, then you're going to have to unlock it. And you're going to do that by root cause inquiry, by prayer, by meditation, by application of the loving all method. I mean, you're going to have to massage that a little bit if you feel locked in. But be aware that if you feel locked in, it's only because you're believing your own BS, which is what we do. You know, there's no, oh, therefore you're a sinner because you got a full shell, right? But it's like, know this need not be. It's okay. It hasn't changed anything fundamentally, but know this need not be. So then the student says, maybe, he says, again, I've read this five times, I'm going to read them for context, I'm going to read it again. When I asked the difference, my master removed my difference and I accepted it, says Papaji. The student said, maybe that's the point. I do not accept enough, but I have it. And Papaji says, do not accept enough, and laughs. I accepted it, and then there was no problem. If you accept, there will be no problem. If you accept, I am free, then you are free. If you accept, I am not free, you are not free. Which seems to be what we were just talking about. If you can't accept it, then you may need to do something till you can accept it. All right. That's the end of that little section. This next section says, yesterday, You said everyone must one day face the truth. If I freely believe, then am I enlightened? I like it too, and I'm going to read you Papaji's response. And my thought is, you know, you can see, can you see the hierarchy there? If I do this, then do I gain something I don't already have, right? Papaji says, "No, I am does not need your belief or disbelief. From the I am, there is no difference. Fully accept I am. That's all. If you have some grades of acceptance, that is, quote, slowly I will try to accept, I will practice to accept, end quote, then you will slowly accept. It depends on you. It will not change. Enlightenment will not change today, tomorrow, the next day. It is the same. Get it now, or after 1 year, or in this lifespan, it will not change. You are not accepting it. You are not accepting it. Accept it fully, and where is the problem? You are already free. Who tells you that you are not free? You are not opening to it. You are afraid to even utter, I am free. I do not know what that fear is. When people say, I am bound, I am suffering, I am miserable, they feel free to speak. I am free, I am deathless, nobody speaks. Whose fault is this? I went on to this paragraph, but guys, I really want to back up because I felt some opening around this idea of opening to it. So I want to actually back up to that paragraph. He says, "You're not accepting it. Accept it fully, and where is the problem? You are already free. Who tells you that you are not free? You are not opening to it. You are afraid to even utter, I am free. I do not know what that fear is." Yeah, I don't know what it is either. I know that, you know, it's interesting too, because we started this hour today about talking about prayer as a way of opening to the truth. And this is what Papaji's asking us to do, is open to the truth. And it occurs to me that again, to go back to NTI, you know, you can't fill a full shell. Or you can, right? I mean, that what stands in the way is, what seemingly stands in the way are our concepts around, and I imagine that they are, like, you know, deeply rooted concepts around good and bad, reward and punishment. You know, we've talked for so long with Regina about the I am bad thought. But, you know, I mean, even at that level, it's like, okay, how could a bad person be free, right? How could I be bad and still be free? I mean, it's like NTI tells us, you know, don't freak out if you're not getting this, right? Because you're not a sinner. No matter what you do, you're not a sinner. But you know, it just shows you how tightly we grip these ideas of good and bad. You know, I am bad, good and bad. Duality, I haven't earned it yet. I need to, you know, do whatever I need to do to be there. And because we grip so tightly, and I'm sitting here making a fist that y'all can't see, but because we grip so tightly to our concepts, we are not open to the ever-present, always accessible nature of our beingness. So, you know, so if I asked myself, and I said I would go to my reading if I needed to. I don't think I have it in front of me. But if I ask myself how I'm not open, hang on a second. I know I'm almost out of time, but I'm going to run and get that. It's in the living room. I'll be right back. Sorry, guys. Seems like I was just writing about that. Let's see if that's true. All right, I'm just going to read it. Because I'm thinking of, the question came to me, how am I not open? And that's not exactly what I've written on here, but this seems relevant. And this was on day 10, the daily contemplation for day 10. Listening to me is a surrender in which you are willing not to listen to yourself. Even more, you place the desire to trust yourself completely aside and put all trust for everything completely in me. This is what I mean when I ask that you listen to me. So I guess I'm equating this openness with this willingness to put my, well, with the same thing. So let me just read. It says, what does not listening to myself mean? Will I not still hear thoughts in mind? Would that I could have stopped hearing thoughts. I would have done so by now. Does this mean that I quit believing the thoughts that appear in the mind? Isn't this the same as saying that I am to quit trusting them? To quit trusting myself? Notice that I am asked to place aside the desire to trust myself. How is this desire to trust myself, how is this desire manifested? I see I've got a typo, although I didn't type it, I wrote, handwrote it. But is it, I wrote the unwillingness, but I meant willingness. Is it the willingness to pursue some plan rather than to simply wait and see what is given? Teach me to wait to see what is given. Are there words to describe how I should be in order to follow this guidance? I asked. This is funny. Then I wrote, it is in the beingness that you are that you experience joyful expectancy. I cannot give you a plan that describes how not to plan. Wait in that space and you shall see the basis of the play. All right, so let's go back to my original question here, my launching point, and that was, how do we be open? Again, Papaji says, you are not accepting it. Accept it fully. And where is the problem? You are already free. Who tells you that you are not free? You are not opening to it. So it seems like this opening is that willingness to wait and that quiet expectancy of, if you will, or potentiality, you know, to really to drop the plans and to you know, if you, if so, dropping the plan would be removing that trust, right? From, oh, I gotta make a plan so that I'm safe, or just so I won't be bored for the next 10 minutes, or whatever it is. And you can see how that's contrasted with, no, don't make a plan. Sit here, trust this, trust me. Don't rely on, don't feel like you have to fill up what must be done, what should be done, what fill up your mind, fill up, you know, you don't have to write this script. Just let go and, you know, go with the flow. I know that sounds pedestrian, but sit there and trust what is to be what it is without adding the fear to it. That's opening to the truth of what we are. Seems to me. So, all right. That's where we're going to leave this week. I appreciate you all being here. I appreciate you allowing me to be here with you. I love you guys dearly, and we'll talk about this some more next time. Okay, letting go of the mic.